What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today I have with me Pat. Pat, welcome to the show, dude.
Thank you very much. We finally got it lined up.
We had a crisscross.
But I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. I have been following you for a long time, but I selfishly, and it's always just a good podcast intro to talk a little bit about your background, your story, what you do now, how you became so passionate in fitness, and, you know, classic podcast intro stuff. Let it rip.
For sure. So it's long-winded, but I'll kind of summarize it. So I've been around the pond a little bit. I'm hailing from Ireland, so I have this weird halvesy accent. I was born in Boston, so moved back to Ireland very young, lived most of my kind of adolescent life there, and then I ended up moving back here about 5-6 years ago. So I have this weird accent where when I go back to Ireland, they call me a Yank, and when I come here, they're like, you're an Irishman. So it's like this weird mold. But so I'm a performance nutritionist by trade, sports performance nutritionist, but I help a wide range of people. I don't just focus on athletes. I've been doing it for about 10 years. So I've been coaching for about 10 years now. Started when I was 20. I have my master's degree in nutrition and a postgraduate degree in sports and performance nutrition. Last year, I was out in Vegas at an NBA performance facility. So that was definitely one of the highlights. That was cool as shit. I was working with a bunch of NBA guys. But it was amazing for 3 to 4 months in the summer, meeting all these guys. It's their off season, helping them fuel, giving them supplement plans. And then 8 months of just nothing in the winter, really. So, and I was kind of getting away from coaching. I couldn't really work privately at that time because I was so busy during the summer. And, you know, there was a conflict there. So I said, you know what? I want to get back to what I love doing and just helping people privately. So I do that. I work with Clean Health as well. Are you familiar with Clean Health? So that's like a nutrition education company for coaches. It's based in Australia, but, you know, they service international as well. They have courses here in the US, but basically I'm just in the back and I just build the courses with them. I make sure they're all evidence-based. They're all high quality. And that's really cool because I'm just studying and diving into the research all day.
That's awesome. I'm going to poke around a couple things there. Tell me about working with these NBA, you said?
Yeah, NBA and NCAA. So Division I guys who were trying to make drafts. So around, when was it? July, March, April. So around April, sorry, we would have a bunch of the guys who finished the tournament, March Madness. Top guys, like starting point guards on the big names that were in the tournament. And they would come into us. And basically my goal with all of those, from a nutrition perspective, I was the director of nutrition, was just to get them in the best possible shape. And sometimes that means putting on weight. Sometimes that means losing weight and losing body fat. And I would just work with them one-to-one, getting them ready to get drafted. And we would have a handful of them that would actually get drafted, of the 60 guys that get drafted in the NBA draft. But then the others would usually get, pretty much all of them would get contracts for at least the summer league or maybe even the G League affiliate. So it was really cool to just see, to work with a bunch of these guys who were now going to step into an NBA team. And I'll tell you, very few of them had any kind of relationship with the dietitian, with the nutrition staff. There was usually one person who had to do the whole college. And I'm talking big names like, you know, Duke, North Carolina, all these. A lot of times the nutritionist has to do the football team. They might have a team, but they might have to do the football team, the soccer, the basketball, the baseball. So they don't have a huge amount of time with the individual. There are some universities where it's just for the basketball, but a lot of these guys, they just, you know, basketball notoriously, those athletes, they can eat whatever they want. And so they do. So they don't really have much nutrition knowledge, you know? So it was fun. It was really fun.
I think there's both of these tend to be like common thoughts is that these are just genetic freaks that do whatever they want to eat McDonald's and it doesn't make it. They don't give a shit about nutrition. They don't focus. They train like shit. Their training sucks. Yeah. And then there's the other side of it of like, oh, these are the top of the top of the top. They must be getting and doing the best things. And they have the best trainers and the best nutritionists and they take everything super seriously. And ironically, those are two like obviously polar opposite points of view. You're kind of leading into more of that first one of saying, hey, like these guys didn't really have a super big handle on the, you know, these are guys at the top of the top of the top of their game, trying to go to the tippy tippy top of the game. And what you're saying, or I'd love for you to speak on it, is that they actually didn't have like a really great handle on how to take care of themselves from a nutrition standpoint.
Yeah. Really at all. You know, I had guys following keto diets and these guys are training 6 hours a day. So What you just said was exactly my perspective going in. I thought it was either they're genetic freaks, right? They were just handed this amazing set of genetics that they respond to anything. And then there was the other end where there's the guys who are just dialed in. They have private chefs. Everything is handed to them. They have it perfect. But neither is really true. Even the NBA guys who are making millions of dollars, you know, they're going to Chipotle for breakfast and lunch. They might have a private chef for dinner. But, you know, they're kind of, they're eating flexibly as well. So what I found was it's right in the middle. There's no like, okay, there's genetics, right? There's obviously a benefit to having a great set of genetics. However, when we say that, we're kind of reducing the amount of work they do, the amount of training. So these guys were training 6 to 7 hours. Like you're going, the caloric expenditure, how much calories you're burning. I mean, we would break it down with these guys in the consultations and they're burning between 5,000 and 6,000 calories a day. So you see them, they're shredded. They're absolutely shredded. And they are like, when you're watching these guys, you're like, holy fuck, these are like Greek gods. And they can jump out of the building and they can run forever. But it's because they're training that much every single day. And they don't leave the gym. They literally, because there's millions of dollars on the table. These guys are like fighting for their livelihood. And so it's definitely not the reductionist genetic argument that I thought it was. I absolutely thought it was. So they can really put whatever they want in their body and they won't gain fat to the point where it's seen as like damaging or affecting their body composition because they're just burning it. And what I would try to tell them is let's focus on how you feel. Like forget body comp. Yeah, we're not worried about your body fat. That's dialed in. It never really changes. But let's see how you feel after halftime in a game in the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? These guys are playing 40 minutes in a 48 minute game.
Yep.
So we'd focus on that. And that's where their buy-in came for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's the old adage of you can't outwork a bad diet, but I do think at like the elite level of activity, you talk about pro sports athletes, high level endurance athletes, that the like satiety index or like the satiety per calorie ratio that you might look at if you were like trying to manage your calories, it kind of flips on its head and you start to look at foods that are high in calories and low in satiety as potentially being super beneficial. And I'm not saying that means that that's what they should lean into.
No,
primarily.
That's what it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's going to be moments where, hey man, we're like drinking sugar sweetened beverages or we're, you know, putting more oil or looking for carbohydrates that are less high in fiber and less filling. And so I think that that's something that you don't think about much. And I don't think the world should be thinking about much because we have the opposite problem. But from an athletic perspective, I have a, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Alec Blennis. He's just like a amazing endurance athlete. He was just talking the other day on a podcast and he was like, I have to struggle to eat enough food with the activity that I'm doing. So you said that some, you know, for most people, it wasn't necessarily dialing body comp. Maybe some people had to, you know, gain or lose weight, you know, but for the most part, you're like, hey, I want you performing better, right? You're not pitching them fat loss or whatever. They look great. And so they're muscular and they're fit. You're pitching them, hey, I want to help you perform better. I want to help you do better in your sport, last longer in the game, whatever. What are some of the sorts of things that, what interventions we'll call them, things that you would, you know, try and help them change that in order to get them to do that?
Yeah. But first, real quick, because you just made some great points. I want to pull it back because I imagine a lot of your listeners aren't, we'll say, elite athletes. They're more, what would you say?
No, you have an idea. Regular people. Yeah, regular people. Yeah, regular people.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So I was recently on Joey Munoz's podcast. I know you've had him on. And what we did was we talked about this kind of sports performance stuff, but then we filtered it down because a lot of these things that we're talking about, they apply in some way to everyday people as it pertains to your gym sessions, to your runs, whether you're training for some half marathon or a 5K or whatever it is. They're actually filtered down and they actually apply. So don't just listen to the start of this and say, oh, fuck, this one isn't for me, you know? But just two things with the weight gain piece. You're 100% right. We would lean into these kind of higher calorie foods. And I would explain, look, what you said of the adage of you can't out-train a bad diet. When it comes to body composition, right? And we're also talking about immune function, bone health, coming back from injury, cognitive function, aerobic fitness. Like they all factor in there. So yes, these guys could out-train a bad diet when it comes to their body composition, but there's no escaping the vitamins and minerals, the antioxidants that your immune system needs, that your bone needs, right? After a fracture, your ligaments need to repair after these guys tore their meniscus, their ACL, their, you know, Achilles. So all these things factor in. It's not just the body composition vertical. But anyway, so when it came to body composition, the two main strategies that worked wonders was calorie bombs, which is just what you mentioned. So if anyone's listening to this and they're trying to put on significant weight, they just can't, they're a hard gainer. I can tell you right now, these two strategies will work wonders, because that's pretty much my niche, is like working with guys, helping them gain weight. Calorie bombs are foods that are high density, right? A high calorie to volume ratio. And that's kind of what people are trying to avoid when they're trying to lose body fat or lose weight. You're trying to go for more of those. And what I push people towards is like the heart healthy option. So it's a little more cooking oil when you're cooking your lunch or dinner, like olive oil, right? It's full fat dairy. So full fat yogurt, Greek yogurt, full fat milk. Don't worry about the saturated fat in it. You're burning it off. Your heart's doing great. It's not going to affect you too much, right? Nuts and seeds, trail mix, cereals as a pre-workout, all of these things, right? We call them calorie bombs. And you're trying to avoid like high volume foods that are going to fill you up without giving you that bang for your buck.
Can I poke in real quick? So who's trying to gain weight? What's a scenario of somebody who's trying to gain weight? I can't imagine that there's a... Listen, we say gain weight, we're most likely thinking about functional lean mass gains. But, you know, potentially it could be like a football player or somebody for whom literally weight is beneficial. But give me an example of somebody who might be trying to gain weight. What's a scenario where that might happen?
Yeah, so I should have wrote that down. Gain muscle, we'll say, right?
And okay, cool.
For people that are, they call themselves hard gainers, right? And I see them, they're in the gym for years and they're training and they have these very structured programs and they're tracking everything and they're diligent. Well, they are what we call trained people. So you can't be eating in maintenance or a caloric deficit and just rely on your training to produce that mass gain, that muscle mass gain. You have to go into these phases. And they don't have to be bodybuilder bulks and bodybuilder cuts. They're filtered down versions of that, right? So they're kind of bulks and they're cuts, because your body needs a surplus of calories. It needs sufficient protein to signal for those growth processes to occur. And that paired with the training, that's where you're going to see the growth. And then at a point you turn around, you say, okay, now I'm going to work on maintaining the muscle mass, but reducing the fat mass. And you go into those little caloric deficits. But what happens is people either... they don't focus on the diet. They just go hard at the gym. And, you know, when we talk about genetics, genetic predisposition, some people, it is harder to gain muscle mass as effectively. So you'll have to kind of, you'll have to go at them a bit more aggressively, those phases, the bulk and the cuts. So anyone who's trying to gain muscle mass, you know, you're in the gym regularly and that's your goal, body composition. Maybe you don't play a sport, or maybe you do. For playing sports, basketball, football, any contact sport. And don't tell me basketball is not contact. I'm telling you, I was watching these games. Holy shit. It's going to help you. More mass is going to help you, right? Taking contact, staying on the ball in whatever your sport is, in any martial arts sport, any combat sport, more mass is going to help you. You just have to make sure the majority of what you're accruing is functional mass. Because if you go into these bulks, and some of these guys would, they're bringing on a lot of fat mass, and that's not functional. That can open you up for increased injuries. It affects your fitness. And yeah, a whole other array of effects there.
Totally. I'm going to kick it back to you in one sec. There's going to be a person or many people who are listening to that. And just, by the way, I'm going to circle this back. I agree with you. So I'm going to come back to my agreement with you in just a second. But there's going to be somebody who says, oh, you know, body recomposition, I can build muscle at maintenance. I can, you know, everyone talks about recomp, and there's courses and there's, you know, and, you know, I'm at a place now where like I don't argue what is or isn't possible theoretically. I work with, like, I very much have had chats with people who I'm like, hey, let's find out how much proof is in the pudding. And if want to try and recomp for 6 months, take a before and after photo and do everything you can. Eat at maintenance, hit the protein, good training, good sleep, you know, whatever it is, micros, stress management, do it all. Take a before and after. That's what you can expect or less from here on out at maintenance. And what I would say is I've become, like, I used to be, my brain is super logical, and I'd rather like be like, oh, here's what the science says, like, and really lean into it. Yeah. But when I look at, if I just looked at anecdote and practice, by the time somebody hires me, they're probably somebody who's been working in the gym for more than 0 days. Let's just say it's not their first day. And if you've been training for like at least a year, unless you're a genetic freak, what most people are looking for, because I'm not saying you can't build muscle outside of being in a surplus, but the kind of muscle and change that you're typically looking for probably won't happen at maintenance unless you're a genetic freakazoid. And the problem is, if you're a genetic freakazoid, you would have already done that. It would have already happened. I have one client who looks like She was a runner until 40 and then just picked up a weight and never went into a surplus and looks like a bodybuilder. And
I'm like, that
person has never talked about recomping because that person didn't talk about anything. They just exploded. So anyway, my point is you made more of a conclusive statement of like, you're kind of going to have to go into a surplus. And I think that's going to trigger people to be like, well, you know, recomp's a thing, right? You know, you can do this you can even build muscle in a deficit. Chris Barakat's research, whatever. I would agree, though, that practically speaking, after a couple years of hard training, if you're looking to grow an appreciable amount more muscle, not like a theoretical amount, an appreciable, tangible, something you can see in the mirror and feel in your life, I would either tell you straight up, don't bother trying to recomp, or I would say, hey, turn every dial you can for 6 months and assume that that's the best it will ever be because there's diminishing returns with more lean tissue you gain. So it's like, hey, whatever you got in these 6 months, assume the next 6 months, you get 90% of that. And the next 6 months, you get 90% of that. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So I don't mind if people, I do that all the time. Like, hey, let's do 6 months of recomp. And if you fucking have amazing results, then you have amazing results. And if you don't, then you know now. So I just want to say, if people who heard you say that and thought, okay, recomp's a thing, it is a thing. But I think once we're talking about trained individuals, you know, if you want an appreciable amount more muscle, I think a slow and steady surplus, which I'm sure you would agree on the slower side, for better proportion of muscle to fat gain is probably a good idea. So anyway, I just want to say circle back around.
100%. Yeah. And I would say, like, I've experienced in my 10 years of coaching, plenty of examples where that body recomposition is absolutely possible at maintenance or what they report to be a deficit, right? I actually changed my mind on this because I've been very much in the sports nutrition realm. I wasn't really in that domain with the body recomposition. And I worked with Team BioLane, with Lane Norton, for a year and a half. And this was a big part of Lane's content, was the body recomposition and kind of debunking that. And we would have calls and he would talk through it. And it just blew my mind. And I was like, oh my God, this is what... So basically, I 100% agree. There's a subset of people that will respond pretty much to anything, right? And that depends on your background and training. Are you just starting in the gym with a rigid program? And you could be trained for 3 years, but you never did a rigid progressive overload program. You know what I mean? So you will already respond even if you're at maintenance. But as a coach, don't we owe it to our clients to give them the approach that works for 80% of the people, not 20%? You know what I'm saying? So that's why I say you do have to go into these phases, because I've seen it. The majority of people will respond better to those, but there are absolutely the 20%. I mean, these are crude estimations, but they're the 20% that might respond in a different way, for sure.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Agreed. Where were we? I think we're talking about somebody who needed to build muscle, somebody who needed to gain weight. And you said you guys were doing some sort of just some calorie bombs, looking for some
strategies.
Like more.
Yeah. So the one strategy was the calorie bombs and kind of looking past labels on foods, because that's another big thing these guys would have coming in. This food is bad, this food is good. There's a lot of morality tied to foods. We try to get rid of that. I would tell them, hey, look, your body is a furnace right now. You know, it doesn't really matter what's going in, because you're just zapping it as energy. Like 6 to 7 hours on the court, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter what you're eating, but anyway. So that was the first strategy. The second strategy, this is what will work for your audience really well, is food alarms, food reminders throughout the day. And that is, if I tell you, okay, we need to go into this significant caloric surplus for you to gain muscle mass. You're what we call a hard gainer. You're not really responding to like a small surplus, so we have to go hard. People right then imagine, especially if they've been hitting their head against the wall trying to gain weight for years, they're imagining these massive plates of chicken and rice, these very bland meals. And what happens to these people? Now, those who are trying to lose weight for years, you're not going to understand this, but they actually have this fractured relationship with food the same way that people who are always starving themselves do, where they actually become like, they resent their food. They resent eating. They hate it. And so what I'm trying to do there is I say, hey, instead of us loading up the plates at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, why don't we have a small breakfast, small snack, small snack, small lunch, small snack, snack, small dinner, snack, evening snack. And they're like, okay. And what I tell them is every time you finish something significant in the day, whether that's a lot of these guys were in classes, right? Or the workouts, or if you're working a remote job, you finish a meeting, it's an alarm bell to go and get 200 calories. And it can be through, you know, granola bars. It could be a small bowl of cereal. It could be flapjacks, fruit, some drinks, smoothies, whatever. Just, they all add up. They all add up at the end of the day. And this worked extremely well because the guys could get on board with that. I wasn't just giving them 2000 calorie meals, 2000 calorie shakes. It was just food alarms throughout the day. And it, I tell you, this kind of just, I happened upon this and it's probably the most effective strategy.
That's interesting. It's just, it is just funny. And I will be grinning at the, just like the opposite of things you'd do that the general population at large should be thinking about. But of course, just a good, it's good to remember that there are alternative contexts. And I think it's just when people are like, oh, listen, I don't release the video, but if you could watch the video of the podcast so far, you'd see that I've been sipping out of a gallon jug of orange juice since the beginning of this podcast. And that is because I'm currently moving more than ever before. I'm in my cardio bunny era. So I'm still lifting, but I'm in the hybrid era, you know? So I'm at that position where I've had to rethink some of my calorie intake and had to eat more at meals, more liquid calories, you know, doing some of these things.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, it does resonate. I agree with that. My curiosity also is did anybody have to lose weight? Did anybody have, you know, hey, like we, you know, maybe we were getting by in college at this body comp, but like to take it to the next level, it's actually the opposite side of the equation. And how might that have gone?
Yeah. I definitely had a few guys who needed to lose weight, lose body fat. And it was funny because one guy who I worked with for 6 months, he was the first guy who came to us. Every NBA team loved him. They said he was one of the best shooters in the whole draft. But every team said he was overweight and he was carrying too much body fat. And this is the guy who came into me and he was following the keto diet, these extreme rigid diets. And he was a gym rat. He would not leave the gym. He was 9 a.m. on the dot. He'd be in there. He'd be on the treadmill. Then he would go onto the court, back onto the treadmill, do a lift, court, and then another court. And I was like, oh man, this guy's running his body into the ground. So one strategy that worked really well with this guy was periodizing his calories day to day. So we would have just, and this works for people who are trying to lose weight, but they might be a hybrid athlete like yourself. They might be training every day, is just label your days as high and low, because there's a bare minimum of calories. There's a calorie floor. You can't just cut perpetually. Like you have to have bare minimums. And that's so your body can actually recover from the training. It can get the most out of those sessions. And then things aren't compromised, like your immune system, and you're not opening yourself up for injuries, because all of the risks increase as you're in a caloric deficit and you're continually training. So I would help explain that to this guy. And, you know, he wasn't eating carbs when he came to me. Can you believe that? Like 6 hours of training, he wasn't eating carbs. So I would have to debunk the idea of carbs. We slowly got that back in and he felt way better for it. And he absolutely saw progress, because what happens is you're able to do more. You're able to do more. And so when people cut out food groups, I say, if you're cutting calories, there's a certain level of shitness to your diet. If you're cutting out calories and carbs, it's like double fuck you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you don't want to make it extra hard on yourself. And then all I recommend is if you're training, let's say 3 days where you might go out for a run, maybe you hit the gym, so you do two in that day, they should be your higher days. And let's say you're aiming for 2,200 calories, that's your deficit. Well, then maybe it's 2,600 on those days and 2,000 on the lower days, because your body needs that fuel acutely. So after you work out twice that day, your body needs to restore those carbohydrate stores. We call it glycogen.
Yep. Do you find that's like an appeal to performance and adaptation, and that may sometimes run up against a competing hunger distribution across the week? Do you ever find people are like, you know what, I like the idea of this acute nutrition going towards my training on the days where I need it, but like I'm even more hungry on a rest day? Or do you find that this was such an elite level athlete that there was a bit of manual override of like, I'm going to do what I got to do because my life's on the line?
100%. I mean, he was probably going 2,000, 2,200 every day. Yeah. So for me to say, we're just going to stick at that for the lower days and then go for the higher, it was fine. But I 100% get your point. For those people, we're just focusing on the opposite things we talked about earlier. Yep. You want those high volume foods. You want to get them. You want to stretch those 2,000 calories as much as possible.
Yep.
On the lower days. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else that you feel like this experience taught you about elite athletes, or things you learned from elite athletes that you now take with you to coach, you know, non-elite athletes, we'll say?
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest thing, and this is something I've always maintained, but I just got to see it firsthand in that experience, was we're always looking at how our body is looking, and we're forgetting about how we're feeling. And how we're feeling is so important, because the number one factor determining weight loss success, fat loss success, is adherence. That's the number one factor. Like, would you agree with that? Just adherence to any given. Yeah. So if you're looking for maximum adherence to produce maximum movement on the scale, you have to feel good. You can't be dragging yourself to the gym, cold, shivering, hungry, you know, pissed off. That's great in a vacuum. If you can maintain that for 12 weeks, like, you'll see insane progress, but how long can you realistically maintain that without crashing out? And it's the crashing out where the real regression on the scale occurs, where it's, you know, a week or two that you fell off because you just couldn't maintain this approach. So that's the biggest thing I saw, is these guys would come to me and, you know, they're like, Patrick, look, I'm good. But then I would say, all right, how do you feel? So instead of Chick-fil-A today, like, have this meal. We would have prepped meals in the facility, and they would try, and they'd be like, holy shit, yeah, like, I don't have this big, you know, knot in my stomach. I can actually last the full game. I'm feeling great. So that works really well for my fat loss clients as well. I have a lot of people come to me, and, you know, they're eating very little carbs and very restrictive diets. And I say, okay, let's bump up carbs, and we'll keep calories where they are. And I'm just focusing right now on how you're feeling, and they feel better. And then it's at that point that we really focus on the cutting down, you know, and they're cutting then from a very healthy place, rather than just cutting from bare minimum where they were at, hitting their head against the wall. So yeah. I think that's the number one thing I took away. It was just great, because I've been preaching that for my entire career, and to see it firsthand was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that goes for, I think it might look different on an elite athlete to, like, a regular person, but I think the idea of, like, the idea that you're going to immensely suffer your way to a result that you will then maintain is highly, yeah. highly, highly. I mean, listen, a certain level of, I wouldn't even say the word suffering, but I would say certain trade-offs and certain changes and certain restrictions that you have to do to make you, like, you have to, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So when we're talking about making a change to get a result, something must change. We have to make a trade-off. But yeah, the idea that it has to be white knuckling, actually not even has to be, the fact that I just don't believe that that will work ultimately. It will work to get you there, potentially. Some people can white knuckle it from point A to point B. But if you imagine point C is maintaining that result, whatever it is, forever, potentially, then I don't think white knuckling will be a sustainable habit, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. And, like, if we just filter it down to people who are not elite athletes, right? If I use my own example, when I started, and the reason I went for my master's in nutrition was because I was going through all the diets myself. I was like an overweight, you know, 20-year-old, and I was trying all the diets. And I can't remember a gym session where I felt good and I was able to really, really push the weight, push the numbers, and left the gym just feeling good. I was always just struggling through it because I was on some form or another of a diet.
Sure.
And so, like, that's how I would translate it through to everyday people who are just training in the gym. It's just like, how are you feeling in your sessions? You know, the better you're feeling, the more volume you're going to do, the more calories you're expending, the more of an oxygen deficit, the more of a calorie burn on the back end. Like, it all filters in. It all filters in.
Speaking of not doing things in a very extreme way, this will be a really nice pivot to the main topic for today, which we waffled into 30 minutes in here, is 75 hard. And to set the scene, because I want to just throw it to you for as long as you want to talk about 75 hard, that would go against some of the things that we've been talking about here. And I think that to say that there is nothing beneficial about it is not what I would say. And I know that you have some positive things to say about it, so I very much want to hear that. But I can imagine that when I said 75 hard, the listener is having a reaction. They're having a reaction of... And for those of you guys who don't know, you're going to talk about it. I want you to give me more detail on it, but let's assume it's a 75-day challenge with certain tasks and certain rules that you have to do, and it is purposefully extreme is a weird word, but it's, like, purposefully very intensive.
Yeah.
And it rightly or wrongly gets a bad rap for being super extreme, super unsustainable, you know, makes you have, you know, worsens your relationship with certain things like food or relationship or with your body or movement or whatever. And overall, if you just type on the internet, if I go on my stories, hey, what do you guys think of 75 hard? It will get a 90-10 negative outlook. It's very
Yeah.
extreme. It's going to do this. It's going to do that to you. It's going to mess up your views on this and eating disorder that or whatever. And so I'd love for you to tell me more specifically what it is and just your experience with it, because I find it unique. And immediately when I saw your stories about it, I was like, I got to have this guy on, because first of all, I've been following you for a long time. You have great information, but this was a unique perspective. And so I'd love for you to share. I'll shut up. Let it rip.
No, I love that preface because to set the scene, right? I agree with anyone who has negative apprehensions towards it. I have been, for my entire career as a nutritionist, the guy who is against any kind of fad diet, any kind of restrictive diet. I think all foods are good. I think if you like Twinkies, you can have Twinkies, as much as you want, as long as they fit into the diet. I'm that guy. I'm that guy who defends every food. I don't like restrictive diets. I never have. I've gone through the research. I spent time studying and I just see they don't work, right? With that said, I choose to kind of overlook. So the 75 hard, let's just break it down. It's a 75-day challenge. It was created by a guy called Andy Frisella, and he is a very extreme influencer. It's very just black and white, just get the fuck on with it, harden up. Yeah. So I'm not on that page, really. However, I choose to see past, sorry, I have to explain the 75 hard. It's you have to drink a gallon of water a day, right? And we'll come to that in a second. You have to do two workouts a day, and they have to be 45 minutes each, and they have to be split up by a couple of hours. So you can't just do like an hour and a half workout and say the 2 45s. One has to be outside. They have to be continuous in nature. Now, like a walk can be, if you go for a walk and you're pushing yourself and it's not just like you're hanging around and chilling, that counts, right? You have to set up a diet. And this is what I like about it. The diet is whatever you say at the start of the challenge. And so for me, being an evidence-based nutritionist, I set that up. I'm not overly restrictive. You know what I mean? Some people go carnivore for it. Some people do some crazy shit. And I highly disagree with that. You also have to read 10 pages of a nonfiction hard copy book. You can't do audiobooks. And you have to no alcohol. And then I think that's pretty much it. And a progress photo every day.
Progress photo every day.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yep. So I took on this challenge 2 years ago and failed at day 40 because I wanted to go drinking for my good buddy's wedding. Then took it on again in Vegas and I completed it.
Hold on.
And
After the first time, day 40, you decide I have something else I'd rather do. You do that, and the
yeah,
following day, you do not
you're
continue
done.
with it.
Yeah, you're done. You have to do it every
No,
single day.
I know you have to do it that way, but like you could have not done it that way, and so you decided not to continue with it in that moment. Right. That's an
I
interesting
mean,
point.
yes, I mean, well, decided is a funny term because from day like 30 to 40, I'm Irish, right? I love a drink. I don't know. I love a beer. I love a few drinks. And from day 30 to 40, I was just like, oh, this, it was the middle of the summer. And I was like, I want to have a few drinks. This is shit. Why did I start this? And that's who I am, right? So this is why I'm a pro 75 hard. Because I'm the kind of guy who I get these great aspirations, I get these great ideas, and I do them for a week, I do them for 2 weeks, and then it's like I just fall off and I start something new. And that's who I've been my whole life. And so if anyone is like that, and I'm talking anything, not just diet, I'm talking a new sport you took on, a new business you were going to start up, anything. I got into this pattern where I was making promises that I would never keep. And so when I was saying things, they meant nothing. They absolutely meant nothing. And I don't think there's anything worse, really, if you can't believe your own word. Like it's tough. So I got into the challenge again, my first day in Vegas, actually. So my brother went out, I drove across country. And when I got to Vegas, my brother did the last leg of it with me. We went out hard that night, the night I got to Vegas. And then the next morning, I went on to the 75 hard. And I completed it that time. And it changed my life. Now, that time I was, struggling through it. I'd be up at midnight or one finishing the workouts. I didn't do it organized, right? This time I'm on day 46 and I'm smashing it. So I'm getting up in the morning and I'm getting my workout done, half my water gone down the hatch, read my 10 pages progress photo, and I'm like bodying it. I'm on the offensive with it. And all I'm seeing is I don't care about the body composition. I don't care about any of that, all those improvements. All I care about is that on the days where I can't, and I'm telling myself, oh man, you can't do it. We'll just start it again in the winter. I fucking do it. And so what I'm doing is I'm building trust with my word again. And that's the only bit, like for me, that's the biggest thing with the challenge. So it doesn't really, I see past the gallon of water because a gallon of water isn't healthy. You know, I have, my fiance is 100 pounds. Like, so a gallon of water for someone who's, it's ridiculous, you know? So I definitely think that I have two friends who just started it after watching my stuff. And I'm like, and they're both women. And I'm like, you got to use half your body weight in ounces. Don't go for the gallon. It's unhealthy. And that's okay. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's my rundown of the challenge.
So it's a very interesting thing. First of all, the idea of, I struggled to make key promises to myself, and that was starting to have an impact on me emotionally of who I, what you felt about yourself is deep. And I think that that's something that if people want to change their lives, change behavior, that's something they need to confront, is the power of their word to themselves, not to a coach, not to something external to themselves. The interesting thing is there's many schools of thought around how to improve that, right? Self-efficacy, belief in yourself, trust in your own word. What you did, I find, is interesting, is when faced with the inability to, or the idea that you don't keep your word to yourself, that you're like, hey, I'm struggling to follow through, instead of lowering the bar and making easier promises that would give you a higher win rate, right, higher percent chance of winning, you went up and you said, I'm gonna go for the higher risk, high reward, right? Yeah. And so if I'm gonna do all these things, and I think that each one of these things individually could be a little bit challenging, but wouldn't be crazy. But all of them together, this is a challenging thing.
Yeah.
Even for you, with like a presumably on average, a little bit, a few more ducks in a row, like you're probably making a logical choice around your diet changes. You know, you understand the benefits of drinking water and can, you know, tell yourself why it's important. You at least have a relationship with working out. And so you went the other way. So I'm interested in this like moment where you're like, hey, I failed this thing. I'm feeling, presumably, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're like, hey, I'm feeling kind of shitty about quitting. And I really want to keep the promise to myself. You didn't say, let me make this easier. Let me do 60 hard. Let me do 50 hard. Or let me do 75 hard with three of these things. Talk me through the decision to reach upward for something really, really challenging.
That's such a good point. I haven't really even thought of, and I'm just listening to you now, I'm starting to see a pattern. So I think that maybe part of the reason that I wasn't keeping promises is because the promise was always too high reaching, high achieving. You know what I mean? So maybe sometimes these promises aren't achievable enough, and there should be a more approachable first step. You know what I mean? So that's really interesting. And that definitely kind of, now that I say it out loud, that's my pattern for sure. But then just to give myself a little pat on the back, I've always been someone who throws these kind of crazy goals out there. And what I'll do is, that's why I love having a bit of a platform. I'll always just put them on my story. And people ask me, like my friends and stuff, you know, sometimes they get annoyed because they're always seeing this fucking nutrition shit on my social media and stuff. And they're like, why do you always
your job? Like, you know, sorry, it's my job, dude. Like,
I know, but like, should I, you know, some people have their separate coaching pages. So I was like, fuck that. I'm just going to do my page.
Yeah, me too.
But I do that selfishly because once I put it out there, I kind of have to stick to it somewhat. You know what I mean? So anytime I ever think, and I think a lot about not doing the challenge, like quitting it and falling off, the number one thing that keeps me on it is like, oh, I posted day 45 yesterday. People are going to start asking. No one's going to ask. No one cares. But in my head, they do. So I've been this person who throws these kind of crazy challenges. You might not like him, but I love David Goggins. I don't like all his craziness about, you know, the diet and stuff like that when he does speak on it. I just love his mentality of like, you just got to get it done. So sometimes I'll just throw a challenge. Like a few years ago, I said, I'm going to run a marathon on Christmas Day. And I had 8 weeks and I ran it myself. And I was slightly hungover on the day. Funny story, but for another day. But for that, it's like what he says is he's putting cookies in the cookie jar, right? So when he does something that he didn't think he could, and he completes it, he has a cookie that he puts in the cookie jar. And anytime he's struggling or not believing that he is a badass, he has that cookie jar like, no, you fucking ran that marathon. No, you did the 75 hard on the first day moving to Vegas. No, you did it when you were feeling low when you moved back to Boston. Like, I have those in the cookie jar as evidence that I can do whatever I want, you know, that I can achieve whatever goal I set. So you need to build up that bank. You can't just be looking at the bank of the failures. It's kind of moving into that more manifestation where you have to look at things in the positive light of things that you're able to do, the positives of what you're doing, rather than the things that you're failing to do. Does that make sense? Or the lack
of... it totally makes sense. And anyway, I'm thinking of, so we have literature on, you know, when we look at specifically fat loss, but I'm going to use fat loss as a proxy for like making big changes versus little change. Like one of the biggest predictors of long-term weight maintenance is initial weight loss. And initial weight loss is a proxy for a larger deficit. And so when we look at like people who are in large deficits or small deficits, you'd suspect, nah, the people doing it the sustainable way, the small changes, small deficit, they're the ones more likely to sustain it long term. That's not what the data says. Now, that's on a population level. I'd say on an individual level, it's very mixed. And by the way, it's not like it's a landslide victory, but it's certainly not, you know, again, if I put that up on social media, your intuition is going to be like, yeah, people doing it nice and easy, nice and slow, they're going to sustain the results better. That's not what we see. And it points to just a very fascinating thing that we are all wired differently, where like making small changes, making big changes is going to work for different people. And if you're working with a client, sometimes, hey, you're sometimes pushing them to really step up to the plate on something really, really hard ends up being a really fruitful thing. And other times you push somebody too far and it backfires. And what would have been better would have been like, hey, like you're, instead of aiming for that high of protein, let's just incrementally jump up there. And you can even just take that where you're like, let's say you take somebody, we could talk about how somebody might be constipated, they jump up with protein, but forget about that for a second. But like you might, somebody might do better with saying, nah, screw that. We're not tiptoeing up here. We're making some big sweeping changes, because by making big sweeping changes, we can sooner feel the results of doing that. And we can start to use that as motivation, right? Someone's like, hey, I'm in a 200 calorie deficit. Like that is both more sustainable and will take longer to see the results. And you're trying to find that perfect balance. I think it goes for everything. The size of change that you're trying to do needs to be an amount that you can do consistently, but also enough that you're getting some sort of return on it. And I'm seeing like in this moment in you where you're like, yeah, like you could have done 30 hard, right? Or you could have done 75 hard with just like two of these things. But it's possible that for you, that doesn't light a fire for you. And that maybe trying and failing 75 hard a few times to then ultimately do it well, sorry, to then ultimately have done it at all, but then the second time, like this time around, doing it really well, maybe for you, that is just the better route. Like you might look back and be like, yeah, I'm a, and I don't like putting ourselves in like identity boxes, but in moments like this, you might be like, yeah, man, I'm a big swing kind of guy. Like I'm going to do better if I'm a little scared by the goal, if I'm making a big swing. And if you tell me to be like, just drink one more glass of water per day, like I might be more likely to say, fuck that, because it doesn't fire me up. Does any of that resonate, you think?
Oh, 100%. What would you say? That's such a good point. What would you say the main reason for that research that it doesn't really produce significant change with the very moderate approach, the very, very like small approach?
Oh, lack of results, I suspect. People are don't
lack of motivation.
Motivation from the results, totally. Yeah.
And then if we're talking the actual magnitude of that change, it could be within the margin of error. You know what I mean? If we're talking 200 calorie deficit, that could be a tracking error.
Yeah. So someone could be... I don't want to cut across here, but what I want to say to my listener right now is that does not mean that you or I, let's say that research exists. I've had Martin McDonald on to come talk about, you know, aggressive dieting. That does not mean on an individual level you treat people that way. Because I don't think those studies really represent what would be going on working with a one-on-one coach who would have more oversight, more guidance, more individualization. So I think those statistics would change. But it is a reminder of, hey, it's not so simple as just make small changes. You know, it doesn't always need to be that way. And I think 75 or hard is an interesting thing. You're like, you're not the typical, you're not the typical like Andy Frisella disciple. You might be, but you're like an evidence-based nutrition person who like understands like the big foundational rocks. You're not just like I'm just going to do everything to the mega extreme 24/7. We had a whole podcast. The first 30 minutes was us being like, hey, we don't really love super extreme diets, but here we are doing something extreme. So I find that to be interesting.
So great point, right? And not getting political whatsoever, but this is the problem is like, you're either a disciple or you're not of someone. And it's like, I love certain aspects of Andy Frisella and I completely vehemently disagree with others. Same with David Goggins. And so that's what I think it's important for people to think about. It's like, I don't know, even the carnivore MD guy, you might like certain aspects of what he's talking about And then filter out the rest. But you don't have to become this freaking brainless disciple and follow every single part of what they do. You got to be critical. You know what I mean? You have to be skeptical of certain things. And so what I do is I just choose to take certain pieces. And hopefully on my social media, I mean, another reason I like to share it is I'm trying to get a bit more transparent, and I'm showing people, like, I'm not just posting, hey, I bodied the challenge today, challenge done, da da da. I'm like, yo, today I was about to fail this thing. Got in for this workout, got in for this walk. I'm covering it on YouTube where I do long form on it. And I'm like, yo, like, today was just fucking awful. Busted my eye on a ladder, like, but I'm just going to get it done. So what I'm trying to show, just inspire people in that way. I'm not doing it. It's not like easy for me. You know what I mean? I'm struggling through this. And hopefully by you seeing me struggling through it and getting to the end and showing you that change, that transformation mentally, mostly, hopefully that inspires you to now go take something, not the 75 hard, go take on something your own. You know what I mean? Some challenge for yourself. But I agree with, I think the reason people do better with more aggressive approaches is because they see proof in the pudding right off the bat. And I don't think there's any more motivation than seeing the weight drop, than seeing a body composition improvement, than seeing a change in a progress photo. From my experience coaching, there's no better motivation for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
You look at something like 75 hard, look at every extreme diet, every extreme protocol. Like, the word extreme means like you're going to do a lot and you're going to get a lot. And there's nothing wrong with that ratio of effort to return. The challenging part is doing something extreme that is knowingly unsustainable and transitioning from that and taking the good from it and sustaining those things for the long term. So like, there's nothing wrong with doing 75 hard. If you take 75 hard and from day 76, you are more consistent with your workouts, you drink more water, you read more books, like that's awesome. And do you find that to be the case for you, that doing 75 hard is about two things? It's about sharpening your skills of doing stuff even when you don't want to, and understanding that that's perfectly part of life and something you need to get comfortable with. And then it's about maybe those specific habits, because I think it's more, you can tell me, you're the one doing it, but that it's not as much about the specific habits as it is the doing a thing even when you don't want to. But are there specific things in 75 hard that you're like, no, I actually also like that, I'm going to take those habits with me and maybe be able to sustain them for a longer term?
100%. I think what it really shows me is, I mean, the biggest point for me is the keeping the promises and showing that I can actually follow through on something. But the next thing is just the power of consistency, right? And it's like 10 pages, there's more aggressive things we have to do with the challenge, but the 10 pages is not a lot, right? Like 10 pages of a book. And a lot of people, they want to start reading and they'll sit down for an hour or two trying to get through as much of the book as they can. And then tomorrow they don't want to read, but it's like, if you do 10 pages for 75 days, that's 750 pages. That's 4 to 5 books potentially. And you show yourself like, Jesus Christ, with just 10 pages a day, I can cover so much. With just, you know, with just a 45 minute workout a day, I feel the best I've ever, I mean, there's two, but I feel that it doesn't have to be an hour or 2 hours in the gym. With just 45 minutes when you come off the challenge, like, I'll absolutely not be doing two workouts a day once it's over. The one thing I will caution against is if people who, and I feel like nowadays, it's more people than not have this all or nothing mindset, or at least they identify as having an all or nothing mindset. The first thing I say there is that there's definitely levels to that. True all or nothing is like people who have serious, I would say, addiction problems and like serious issues there. But then there's the all or nothing where guys are either on a diet extremely or they're off. And I struggle a little bit with that, where I don't have any addiction problems or anything like that. But I mean, the first time I finished the 75 hard, my fiance hadn't moved out to Vegas. So I literally, telling the truth here, I got 5 guys, 2 big meals, and I got an 8-pack of High Noons. And I just sat at home watching Netflix, drinking and eating. Like, and then I felt so bad about that the next day, I think I got fast a pizza or something. And I think I had a few more beers and I was like, fuck, this is bad. So in that week or two, I definitely got into some bad behaviors, but I know this time I'm kind of, I don't want it to end. Like, I want to keep rolling with it because it's a much different approach. I know I'm not going to go back drinking a bunch and eating a bunch of food, like fast food and things. I was struggling through it last time. This time I'm bodying it. I'm fitting everything into my routine. And then after, I'm definitely going to keep up the reading for sure. And it's just going to be 10 pages. Just wake up, 10 pages. It takes 20 minutes down the hatch, And you'd be very, very surprised at how much you cover with just these small little things every day. Just the key is every day. Small, but every day, you know?
Talk to the person specifically. We got 10 minutes and I want to do a little bit of this. I want you to talk directly to the person who's heard of 75 hard or mm-hmm. maybe hasn't heard 75 hard and is considering it. What would you say to that person? Advice or caution or both?
For sure. First off, there is a soft 75 or a 75 soft. If the 75 hard is too much, I would 100% recommend looking at that because I believe it's one workout a day. It's not a gallon of water. It's just like a regressed version. And I think that's a great jumping in point. For the 75 hard, just make sure on the horizon, because 75 days is a long time. It's just under 3 months. And like, I'm looking back at my progress photos. And when I go to photo one, I'm like, holy shit, you were on this trip. That feels like an eternity ago. And I was still on the challenge. So just make sure you have nothing major coming up that is going to really impede your ability to adhere to it. Cause that's going to affect you mentally. You're not going to think you're able to stick to it when realistically you had a vacation, you had a massive like wedding or something, you know? So just kind of like plan it out. 75 days is almost 3 months and make sure you have nothing significant in those 3 months. And then join the group, because I think community is, there's a Facebook group. I think community is the biggest part of this. And so that's the post I put up yesterday. Like, I'm moving towards that, is not doing challenges like the 75 hard where it's extremely aggressive. But the biggest piece I want to give people is the community. So waking up and feeling like, all right, I have to complete this habit for myself, but also because I'm accountable to a kind of a higher level, like a group. So I would definitely recommend either doing it with someone. If you have a partner who's open to this, it's the best thing you can do. It's the absolute number one thing you can do. If they're open to that, don't force it on them. But if they're open to it, it's the best thing. Because like, your instinct, then you're not sneaking out for workouts at 11 p.m. or, you know, missing social events with them. Like, you're both on that same page. And my fiance did it with me the first time and it was amazing. And then lastly, regress the water. Like, I don't give a shit what they say. 1 gallon of water for smaller females is just way too much. It's way too much. It's unhealthy. And, you know, there was nights where it was like 10 p.m. and she was chugging water. And I'm like, this is bad. Like, no. So I think that would be the last tip.
Did you ever consider changing any of them? Like the water, but for yourself, of like, you know, because I think there's the concept of doing something hard for X amount of days. And then there's the specifics of the things you're doing. Are there any of those that you felt tempted to modify? You mentioned the water for like safety purposes, which I totally agree. I think half body weight an ounce is a good spot. Any of the other ones that you felt like, then there's, even as I'm saying that, I'm kind of triggered, because like, the whole point is maybe, you know, not overly modifying it to the things that you'd really love, you know,
like that's why it's called a 75 hard.
So
yeah.
It's tricky. It's like, you want it to be productive, but you don't want it to be easy. So, but part of it being productive is maybe it not being easy. So yeah, I guess as I'm saying it right now, I'm like, yeah, well, modifying it might defeat part of the purpose, you know?
I mean, that's his whole brand, right? So he has a website, and when you go to the website and the app, there's all these FAQs, and every question has been asked, like, hey, can I work out in my balcony if it's raining? No. It's always no. It's always, you cannot modify it. So that's his brand. So that's what he wants for it. That's what he envisions. And I respect it to a degree. For me, we'll say the diet. So my diet was just, I said, no, like McDonald's fast food, right? I can eat out at restaurants, but I'm not allowed to get any kind of, and I don't eat that anyway, that regularly. I couldn't have candy. I couldn't have ice cream and soda. And that was my diet. You know what I mean? My diet's like very well-balanced other than that. So I didn't need to, but you see people who are saying you have to do it. There's no restrictions on the diet.
Right.
It's open to interpretation. So anyone who says you have to do something like fasting, you know, like there's a lot of people who do a carnivore. It's crazy. There's a lot of people who do they do very rigid
75
diets.
Days of diarrhea.
Yeah. 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 And like with the water, 75 days, I just mentioned, is a long time. So with the water point, I say it's not making it easy. It's actually making it healthy, because if you're drinking way too much water for 75 days, like, that's definitely taking a toll on your body. If it was like 2 weeks, it's a different conversation. But if it's 75 days, like, that's a long time. It's too much water. So that's that. And then the workouts, all you have to do with the workouts is just push yourself in whatever you're doing. If it's a walk, it's not a casual walk. It's like, you know, pushing the pace, continuous. But other than that, the diet, regress it to whatever, you know, that means for you.
What have your workouts looked like? What have you done for the 2 days?
I'll be honest, I've lifted almost every day of it, which is.
I mean, if you have to work out, like, that's typically not what I would recommend. But if I
Yeah.
had to work out twice per day, shit, I'd be like, cool, like I'm making up a 7 day split,
Yeah, 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 yeah.
or the occasional day off where I'll go for like two really brisk walks, maybe. But yeah, I would strongly consider that. So I get that, yeah.
So funny part about me is like I'm in this field, health, fitness, coaching. I hate lifting, really. I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm a lot of my peers in this, they fucking love lifting. Like they love, now I'm at a point where I really enjoy going to the gym, but like I'm a basketball player. I love playing sports. You know what I mean? I don't like going to the gym. So for me, I was never consistent in the gym in the past 5 to 6 years. In college, I was, but so that was part of it. I was like, man, I had CNS fatigue. I was exhausted. Joints are sore. But that's part of my journey right now. It's like, just keep going. You've never broken past a month consistently on a program. So now we're going to do it. We're going to do 3 months. And we're just going to fucking follow through on that. No
Yeah.
matter the consequences, obviously, we're not, going to wreck our body. But so that's with the, so I do a lift. I'll usually walk my dog or I'll run. I usually walk my dog like at a good pace, 45 minutes. Or run and
He's
or
getting in
we,
great shape, man.
dude, I'm feeling better than ever, I'll tell
No, I
you.
meant your dog. I meant your
Oh
dog.
yeah. My dog's lost like he was chubby. He's lost like 10
He's
pounds.
doing 75 hard too. I get it. Yeah. Okay.
And he's literally, it will be like 30 minutes into the walk and he'll be dragging me towards the house. And that was never a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
It's
yeah.
hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Sweet man. Sweet man. I want to wrap things up. I don't take up too much of your time, but I really like this chat. It's so good to hear. I totally see how it could be helpful. This is the idea that nobody can benefit from doing something extremely challenging just doesn't make sense. Of course, there's going to be net positives here. I'm curious where you're at 75 days afterwards, right? I'm curious. Maybe we'll just chit chat about that afterwards because I think that that's the real challenge of making it to day 75,000, and still lifting and still reading and still, maybe not every single day for the rest of your life with no days off, but is using this as a jumping off point, and not letting this be the end of this level of commitment to certain things. So I'm looking forward to hearing from you about how you're doing afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, they have a whole program for a year. It's a month off. So he wants you to go for a month off. And then as part of the official program, you do 30 days back on the original. Then you move to a higher 30 days, or sorry, you do another month off. So his idea is exactly, so like he has put a lot of thought into this program. So he wants 2 months off in between so that you don't completely regress without this need to log in on the app and do it every day. So there's definitely iterations. I mean, I have this dream. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. I'm not saying it for sure now, but I have this dream of doing it for 365 days. I don't know if this is the time, but we'll see.
Good luck, man. Good luck. Drop a line on where people could find you, where people can work with you, and we'll get all that stuff out there.
Yeah, just Pat Sports Nutritionist. That's my tag on Instagram. Haven't been posting very actively, in the past few months, but I'm kind of relaunching that. And then the only other thing right now is the YouTube channel, which is Patrick McCarthy 167. Yeah. I have it on my Instagram bio and I'm just posting a video a week and it's just an insight to the 75 hard journey, or I'll just break down, I just took people on my grocery shop the other day. So that's pretty much my only two links. It's nice. I don't have these fucking massive lists of like, get my ebook, get my, it's just like two things. If you want to follow along, we'd love to have you, but I appreciate you having me on, my man.
Cool, man. It's good to get to know you, good to chat with you, and I know people will enjoy the chat. So thanks for coming on, dude.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.